Welcome to the PG Growth Planned Giving Podcast. Hello, and thank you for joining me here on the PG Growth Planned Giving Podcast. I'm Ed Sluga. You know, normally on our podcast, we try to cover topics that are in some ways timeless, issues that we've seen that continually are experienced by people in our fundraising profession. And we look at them, hopefully, with a long-term vision. Where did they come from? Where are we now? Where are we going to? Having that perspective that connects organizations' efforts and particularly programming around planned giving, and how do they ensure they're working off of history, establish a program for today, and operate it well into the future. A little bit of a different take on things today. Today, we are going to be listening to the recording of a town hall that we did with Grant Monk, our senior counsel in Vancouver. The town hall was around recession-proofing your overall fundraising program. Now, there's a little bit of planned giving in this, but we talk about major giving as well, and just generally speaking, how we engage with donors, how we move our program forward on all three levels, that is annual giving, major giving, and planned giving, and most importantly, how we prepare ourselves for the inevitable ups and downs of any economic cycle. Recessions happen. We talk a little bit about them. We also talk about COVID and some of the lessons that we learned as we entered into COVID in the early part of 2020, what our clients and colleagues across the country and charities thought about and did during COVID, some of them vastly changing activity and ensuring that they started moving to a more diversified area of fundraising or areas of fundraising, and then how they began to benefit from that. We also talk a little bit about people and organizations slipping back to perhaps single focuses of fundraising effort now that COVID is slowly leaving us in terms of restrictions, lockdowns, and some of the curtailment of activity that we had during the time of COVID. So ultimately, what's that mean? COVID, downturns in the economy, recessions. How do we make sure that we are taking a look holistically at all of our fundraising? Learn some lessons from the forced change in the way that we raise money through COVID, making sure that we take what was really good about our efforts in terms of diversification and making that a common and ongoing activity within our fundraising. So, interesting conversation. Again, this is a snippet of a town hall. A couple things about it. One is that it's just a presentation part. We did have Q&A, but we don't go into that. There were a few technical issues. This happens, of course, all of us have experienced that aspect of technical issue during COVID, working from home, not being in common places and working together. So pardon us for those technical issues, but I think otherwise the conversation was a good one and I think you'll enjoy it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. And just to kind of let you know what Julia was meaning by that, Grant was in and ready to go and then was booted out. Technology, that's what we were referencing earlier. He's made a quick comeback and he is here and we're happy that he is here and we're going to share duties here. So welcome, Grant. thank you for managing to get back on.
No problem.
So what are we here to discuss today? And I think I want to do two things. One is to reference back to a town hall that we had in 2020, I believe April of 2020. So going on 3 years ago now, of course, in April of 2020, the pandemic and all that it meant was new to us. And we were really trying to figure things out at that point. And then obviously the other point is that during the following 3 years, we've learned a lot. We've seen a lot. We've talked to, we personally, each of us personally on our team have talked to a lot of folks. We've worked with a lot of organizations, as have all of you. You've talked to colleagues. You may have switched organizations during that time. So what we're here to discuss is really about certain aspects that have come. Of course, you know, that COVID activity brought a unique risk and opportunity to our sector, right? We knew this. At first, we had no idea what this was going to mean for any of the forms of fundraising that we undertook for our organizations. And so that was an incredibly difficult time for all of us, and we'll talk a little bit about successes, some misses as we as some of our folks in our sector went along. But it was unique, and it brought along the great deal of risk. Layered on top of that was, of course, the economic realities, and there has been all sorts of continued economic flux, to put it mildly, that's happened over the last little while, and which has added to the difficulty of a lot of our colleagues in the charitable sector and the work that they're doing. What we did learn, though, through COVID, and particularly at the outset of COVID, was our donors were really actually eager to seek out ways to help. This actually surprised a lot of organizations, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But when we were all determining whether we were going to raise another dollar ever again going into COVID, what we found was donors were seeking us out, asking for ways to support us, providing opportunity to engage with them. And to some organizations, this was a surprise. And in fact, they were unable to, or were not positioned properly to engage with those donors. And they found that to be frustrating. For some internally, it was perhaps an I told you so moment, but the reality was that organizations both benefited and were caught flat-footed with these circumstances. So you know, the other thing we need to discuss is perhaps this has been a learning moment for all of us. This has been a unique societal moment that we've all been through. As you probably all know, we are a unique group that we focus a little bit on planned giving, but we work in major giving as well. We, of course, are all seasoned professionals and understand annual giving because of it. And one of the things that we often find when we're working with organizations is that they are looking at those particular programs of revenue and kind of slicing and dicing them and really thinking them as you know, less revenue focused, more engagement focused. And what we need to do is perhaps change our thinking. What we found, and I'm sure again that you know this, what we found was when organizations actually had diversified or could quickly move to diversify those revenue streams, they were able to maximize the opportunity that presented itself during the COVID situation. An example of that, of course, is the fact that some organizations that are heavily invested in event tactics within their annual fund program and perhaps not heavily invested in major or planned giving, or had not been, could not switch that gear at that particular moment. Some could. And so there was, of course, we saw lots of fallout because of that. The organizations that were able to switch gears or already had that within their gearbox, this activity, were in good shape. Others quickly started to think about moving because they felt that they needed to move into this new approach. But the thinking of that, and sorry, so for some reason I've stopped presenting here, which is odd. Sorry about this, everyone. Just give me a second here. I seem to be on my screen. Julia, can you see? Tell me what you see on the screen. Do you see me or do you see the presentation?
I can see you now on the screen.
I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, you just need to present again. It was...
Yeah, something happened there. I don't think I touched anything, but there you go. And
It's one of those webinars. The technology is fighting back.
Exactly. And I don't seem to be able to do that for some strange reason, Julia.
All right.
Bear with us, everyone.
Yeah. You keep going, Ed. I can work on opening it from my end as well.
I think I'm okay now. I think this is going to change things. Okay. We're back now.
There we go.
I can see you. Do not know what happened there. Everyone apologize for that, but we are back. I may have pressed something. So even through all of this, even through the fact that there was demonstrated successes in this diversification and demonstrated interest in donors to engage in lots of other ways of supporting the organization outside of those areas, what we're seeing is that there is a slippage back now. And that's a really interesting moment for us, because what we think that was a real positive through COVID was this notion, and we'll talk about the future economic or the current economic flux that we're in a moment. But what we saw was a positive move towards this diversification of revenue. And now we're starting to see a little bit of slippage where we're getting back to the ways of doing things that were around some time ago. What do we mean by that? So let me just go through a brief little tutorial here. For those of you who know all of this, I am very, very sorry, but I will go through this very, very quickly for those who are perhaps seeing this for the first time. Some of you may know that I teach the AFP Fundamentals course, and in that, there is a very clear definition of the programs of fundraising. So academically, that's a curriculum that is taught internationally. So let's kind of refer back to it. There are three ways to raise money: annual giving programs, major giving programs, and planned giving programs. Now, I won't go through all of them, but I will talk a little bit about our stool there. And that stool analogy was given to me by a CEO of a large Canadian Hospital Foundation, who, when I was explaining this to them, they said, oh, it's kind of like a three-legged stool. And that's exactly correct. And so when we're thinking about diversification, what we're thinking about is fully engaged in all of these areas. And not just thinking that we're doing events, direct response, and a little bit of major giving, so we are diversified. We're not at that point. We're doing well to go toward it, but we're not diversified. So why diversified? Why do we need to change? We need to change our thinking a little bit. And what I mean by that, and what we mean by that, is some organizations feel that they're engaging in these multiple activities is them diversifying. But what we found during COVID, and what we're also seeing in some of the forecasting that's coming out, Imagine Canada just released some information about fundraising. There's going to essentially be the feeling of a downturn in this particular year, particularly in the first two quarters. That's what they're talking about. There's a downturn in one area of our revenue generation, one stream or program of it, and that's the annual fund. So what a lot of us believe, well, we're doing lots of different fundraising programs. No, we're doing certain appeals and campaigns within this program of annual fund. We need to start thinking about those other two areas. Many organizations are involved in major giving, but oftentimes that only happens in campaign, if at all. Oftentimes, too, that some of those organizations are engaging in major gift fundraising as really an extension of their annual program. They ask certain individuals for large gifts every year, and they get them, which in some of our some of the organizations that fully have a diversified way of raising revenue. That would be a large annual fund gift. And then, of course, we see organizations, the vast majority of organizations in Canada that operate plan giving as a series of happy accidents. Gifts have come in. There's often the notion that, we didn't know where they came from. They came from, quote unquote, out of the blue. And this is a misinterpretation of this kind of fundraising, obviously. A lot of times when we talk to organizations, they almost apologetically say, well, we do this. We just think of them as happy accidents. We're passive. That's actually the majority of that's the norm. That's not the exception. That is the rule currently. So when we're doing that, we leave ourselves at risk. That's simply the circumstance that we're in. So why do we want to diversify? So this is some research that I use at while teaching at the Humber College Fundraising Management course. I inherited this information from our good friend Ken Ramsey. And it does actually kind of show us a little bit of a reality here that that we see within the recession times, which is, and again, even this is kind of broken up a little bit, not in the three main areas of programming, individuals or those kind of annual fund gifts, we see a decrease. So for overall, there's a decrease of overall fundraising in recession years. That's what we've seen. Again, Imagine Canada's recent report is signaling to be prepared for that. But that's really in a couple of our areas. Foundations tend to be down. That's a form of major gift fundraising, of course. Corporate fundraising tends to be flat during this time. That's for lots of different reasons. Corporations often will want to continue to be supportive of community, supportive of the organizations that they are partnered with. Oftentimes they have agreements that are multiple year in terms of sponsorship, so that stays a little flat. Bequest gifts or planned gifts go up. Now this is not, this is just an indicator of the fact that if you're seeing some slippage in some areas, if you're properly diversified, you may see increases in others. And during COVID, what we have heard is a lot of organizations saying very clearly that without bequest gifts during this time, we would not have been able to continue to operate at the level that we would like to have operated. Other organizations we know of were unable to replace the annual fund revenue or major gift revenue during this time. So at that point, they saw a decrease and activity happened in relation to that decrease because they weren't fully diversified. So that's an interesting, I think, slide that shows us why diversification. I think, Grant, I'm going to turn it over to you because you're going to talk a little bit more about why that diversification is so important.
No, I'm happy to do that, Ed. And just to let everybody know how we're such experienced presenters, I actually have just a blank black screen in front of me, but I do have the hard copy. So I'm just going to slowly go through. So what I'm looking at on my iPhone is the slide gifts of cash and non-cash assets. And what I'd like to do for a few minutes is to speak about the distinction between those two, because I think it's key in terms of the point of diversification that Ed was bringing up earlier. So Ed, if we could just move on to the next slide, where I'd like to talk a bit about gifts of cash.
Go ahead. I've done that.
In my view, gifts of cash, not only are they the most common, all of us deal with them on a daily basis. We solicit those types of gifts. They're really, in my view, the first and smaller pocket. It could be an annual gift, could be a multi-year pledge. But in my view, if you're only asking for gifts of cash, you may be leaving many large gifts on the table. And one thing I'd like you to think about, especially people that have joined us today that are involved in what we call normally major gifts, where you're normally asking for, larger gifts that may be based in cash. How often have you had an experience where you have a meeting with a passionate, engaged donor, and you're finally at the point in your discussions with this donor, couple, family, to say, would you consider X amount for this project? A project you know they're interested in, that they want to support. What I found over the years, they have a certain look on their face, and it's almost like they're visualizing their bank account. And their question in their mind is, can I afford this? And in many cases, the response you may receive from them is, we'll consider it. Not sure if we can afford it, maybe. And what we want to talk a bit about when we move into a discussion now around gifts of assets is, can we get those individuals that you know want to support your organization or a particular program, can we get them from maybe to yes? And that's why I think the combination of gifts of cash and non-cash assets is so important. So in terms of gifts of non-cash assets, in my view, it's really the second and larger pocket. And as we know, the greatest wealth comes from individuals held in non-cash assets. And they could be, you know, publicly listed securities, real estate. And for the gift planners that are part of our session today, we know that this discussion that we have around gifts of non-cash assets can in many cases be affected by tax incentives. And I'm always of the view that mission will bring your donors to the table, but tax incentives, as we all know, may increase the size of the gift. So now, Ed, I'd just like to move on to some research that I think supports this from Russell James. And when I talked about the fact that, you know, gifts of non-cash assets or non-cash assets is the major holding of individuals, couples, and families, I think you can see really well illustrated by this pie chart. And this is a US study, but I think in many cases it applies to Canadians. So to keep in mind about my example about having that discussion with the donor, would you consider X gift? If you're solely having a cash discussion with that individual, you may be only talking about 3% of their ability to give, a very small part of your donor's assets. And you may be leaving a large amount of money on the table for donor discussions. And then the next slide, again, you know, Ed talked about, you know, what's going to happen in the future. You know, we've gone through a number of recessions in Canada, and this study took place right after the 2008 recession that, as we all know, affected North America very severely. But what Russell James did in this case was he looked at organizations that had raised $1 million or more between 2010 and 2015. He wanted to specifically look at their revenue. And you can see the growth for this period for charities that only received cash was 11%. For those organizations that put some focus on non-cash assets, that growth was 50%. And then the organizations that also promoted and had discussions around gifts of publicly listed securities, cash and non-cash assets, their growth was 66%. So you can see a substantial difference here in the way organizations asked, tried to diversify their funding sources after the recession and what the impact was. So I'll turn it over to you again, Ed, at this point.
Yeah, thanks, Grant. And just before we leave that one, just before we leave that slide, I just wanted to add one other thing. And this is where diversification and collaboration or coordination comes in. One of the things we talk to our clients about regularly, and something you can take away, is, of course, doing as part of your annual fund ask at the end of the calendar year, is to incorporate a publicly listed securities ask within it. So essentially, you're using annual fund to collaborate with your other stream of revenue, which is the planned giving stream or major giving stream, depending on where you fit security gifts or these asset gifts, and ask for those in an annual fund way. So you can see diversification, first and foremost, allows you to be nimble in that way. and allows you to actually engage to a greater degree in these non-cash approaches. But the first thing is a mindset shift. And that mindset shift about these different streams of revenue allow you to think about coordination, collaboration, and using them in lots of different ways. So why do we want to do this gift of asset? And not only is it a huge, the larger of the two pockets of wealth, as Grant says, but here is some research from the Canadian Association of Gift Planners from March of 2020 that shows that there is this intergenerational asset transference that is going on, this transfer of wealth. Now, two things about this. If our colleague Catherine Blake was on this, she would be interrupting me right now to say, Ed, it's actually trillions of dollars. So I take our good friends at the CAGP's research and I use it. There is other research out there right now about this asset transfer that is happening. And are we going to be part of it as charities? The other part of it, of course, is that this is the latest transfer of wealth. There are other there has been other transfers of wealth when I got into planned giving and charitable fundraising in the 90s. They were talking about a transfer of wealth from one generation to another. There's another one happening now. There will be more. And so diversification as we go along is taking into account that feeling and this massive transfer of wealth. The other aspect of it, and again, it's this coordination across things. Some more research that was done this time, is about how once a planned gift, so diversification, engagement with donors, providing them with an opportunity to create another form of gift, another form of partnership, essentially. When we do that, their annual giving goes up. So lots of great research here. It's a really wonderful indicator of not only is diversification wonderful for this kind of recession proofing, but it actually brings our donors closer to us by providing them lots of wonderful ways of donating, and that continued partnership, the growth of that partnership, elevates their other giving. So this is another really important part of why we want to do this and connect. So what should we be asking ourselves, right? Are we really committed to our donors through this particular case? Because they're showing us in a lot of different ways opportunities, whether they're showing us opportunities to think in a different way rather than, as Grant says, looking at, you know, thinking of their bank account when we ask them for a gift on the major gift side, thinking about end of year giving as a cash donation rather than a public listed security, thinking about partnering with them. Are we committed to them, or are we committed to raising funds in these particular areas which help us? And is a kind of a monologue with our donor rather than a dialogue. And then through that engagement, through that commitment, you know, of course we're acquiring, retaining donors. Are we elevating them? Are we stewarding donors? That's a very important part of all of this. Of course, as we know, retaining that donor and allowing through good, strong stewardship allows us to move them through these other areas. These are the streams of revenue. So we're not just acquiring them to those other streams or donors to those other streams. We're allowing our donors to choose multiple streams or all three of those programs to be involved in. So are we doing that for our current stakeholders? Are we prepared for future stakeholders? So the other thing is, why do we continue to think about this kind, you know, these various programs of fundraising as an either or bargain? It should be a this and that bargain. We do hear lots of organizations making determinations that they don't have budget for something. And that's essentially leaving the playing field in that particular area. There's deciding there's money to be made in this area, this stream of revenue, this program of fundraising, but we are not going to participate in it. So that's a really important thing because, we can look at these happy accidents on the plan giving side. We can look at, you know, the on occasion involvement on the major gift side. You know, the fact is competition is increasing, and we in the fundraising world don't like to think of competition. We like to think of everyone collectively working to engage with donors to support our missions, and all of our missions make our society a better place. And that's absolutely true, and I believe in that as well, but we do still want to engage with our donors. They're caring about us. They're committed to us. We want to reach out to them and commit to them, but we also have to remember that charities are not our only competitors out there. Financial institutions are currently competitors with us. They're talking to our donors, and they're giving them options in terms of their fundraising. And we're ceding that ground to a certain degree to those financial institutions. So we have to be aware of that. So just getting back to this diversification aspect, these are three purposeful areas of fundraising that we need to be engaged in. And be fully involved, and to have this strong three-legged stool. And we have to remember, this is all part. Our colleague Tracy Church would say, your donor wants to support you. They want to make the world a better place to live. We have to give them the opportunities to maximize their support. If we're working in certain areas only, and thinking of that as diversification, we're really not providing the breadth of opportunity that donors are seeking to engage with us and to provide those funds for us. So that's our presentation right now. We're going to start off by, I'm going to just ask a few open questions for Grant. He and I are going to start chatting a little bit about it. This is the time where if you do have a question, please do feel free to put it in the chat now. Julia will be looking at it. I'm going to stop presenting right now, but I'm going to just quickly go over, just go to the next slide and take a look at the questions that we're just going to start engaging in. And if you have these questions, if you want to ask it in a different way, please feel free. If you have a different question, again, please feel free and put your hand up in the chat and go from there. So quickly, I'm going to stop presenting. I should be not presenting now. So Grant, the first and foremost is from your experience you're involved with lots of organizations. I know this from in lots of different ways, of course, through planned gifts, but major gifts, strategic planning activity that you're involved in, planning the future of organizations and how they're going to go and fund that future. Why are you finding that organizations are not taking advantage? We're calling it not diversifying, but really not taking and maximizing the opportunities that are available to them in these areas of fundraising. What's been your experience around that?
Well, I think it's interesting, and this may be an odd initial response, but I think one of the main reasons that organizations have not diversified is they're following one of the cardinal rules of fundraising, that you need to retain the revenue that you have. And, you know, each year, many organizations will start with a fundraising goal or a revenue goal of zero. And in many cases, they're building on those tried and true revenue sources. I've spent a lot of time over the decades, especially in British Columbia, working with organizations that for the most part have relied very heavily on government sources of revenue, or what I call institutional sources of revenue, such as corporations and foundations, where you're not actually dealing with individuals that hold money, but you're dealing with the gatekeepers, right? And, you know, I think the issue, though, is over time, and this seems to pop up more under a microscope during recessions or what we've gone through with the pandemic. I think some organizations have become too reliant on a very finite number of sources of revenue. And I think a great example, Ed, I know we've experienced in PG Growth and talking to a lot of national organizations that have relied on in-person events, galas. They've been very successful. Some of them have very high nets in revenue, but all of a sudden the world changed. And without being diversified, I think they came up with some major challenges. I think also, you may ask, some of the reasons that organizations don't diversify. And I think we experience this in conversations that we have with clients every day. In some cases, it's fear of the unknown. It's, will we have the expertise to go into these areas? Will our board support us? Do we have the right staff complement? If we need additional staff, who should we recruit? I think also, though, in fairness, there are some organizations, especially larger organizations, that have done very well with a few eggs in the basket that have become complacent. And I think that they have to break out of that complacency.
Yeah, I agree with you on that part. And what we did see during the initial aspect of the part of the pandemic was some very large, well-known organizations suffer. Just to use that term, because we know colleagues, in fact, who found themselves, and I'll just be very blunt about it, out of jobs, out of work, because they were, the events that drove, or the annual fund activity that drove revenue, they weren't diversified to the level that they should be. It immediately was gone. No one knew when it might come back, if ever. Remember, that's the way we were talking about that when COVID began. And so decisions were made to, decrease workforce and that sort of activity. And that was, I want to bring in something that our colleague Peggy Colleen uses in some of her presentations about something. It's a quote from board.org, and I'm not going to get this directly correct, but the reality is that a board's job is to foresee the future, to take into account the idea that there might be a pandemic.
Yes.
There might be an economic downturn. What are we doing currently in the good times to ensure that when the bad times come, and you saw from that recession graph, the bad times come on a regular basis. What are we doing today as a board, as leadership, to ensure that when they do come, we are not going to experience the type of downturn that others will, or we're going to protect our mission, but also protect our people and our brand.
That was a portion of the town hall that Grant Monk and I gave related to the idea of recession-proofing your fundraising program. Interesting discussion, interesting comments. Like with all of our webinars, there were some wonderful questions afterward, and that led to our conversation expanding a little bit. For that kind of interaction, we encourage you to join our webinars when they do come up and are available. Many of them are for free, and they really do allow you to have a good look and a good feel for the topic and engage as well. Again, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to our podcast, and we hope to see you soon.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of the PG Growth Plan Giving Podcast. For more episodes of our podcast, please go to pggrowth.com, or you can find us on your favorite app related to podcasts, or look for us on iTunes, on Spotify, and on Google Play. Until next time, thanks for joining me. I'm Ed Sluga.